for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 470 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is another great doubleheader episode, and it all starts off with Gerald J. Jones back again, this time to talk about episode 2 of Driver 8. Here's how it's described. Driver 8 issue number 2 is the explosive 30-page second issue of the near-future science fiction comic Driver 8, taking you further beyond reality's edge. He's got a Kickstarter going on right now to support it, and we discuss what's going on in the series in the second issue, as well as what we can expect in the future. Then everything wraps up with my first interview with Aaron Pohara, the creator of the Book of Lyaxia. It's a great fantasy title that I think you'll enjoy. This book is described this way. There is an eternal war between gods. Two brothers of royal blood want to break the cycle, but what is the cost? This book is released by Second Sight Publishing, and it's part of their Second Verse line. We talk about how the book came to be, we talk about identical twins and what that means to me, as well as what we might expect from the series in the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what both of them have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast, Gerald J. Jones, the creator of Driver.8 is the way that it's on the cover. I want to make sure I get that straight. And you've got a Kickstarter going for the second chapter in this, or second episode. So yeah. How you doing, Gerald?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to talk with you. I love the first issue, and luckily you made the second issue available to me. I should say episode. I keep saying issue. But the second episode, which is really good. Refresh my memory. How many episodes are going to be in this story?
We're going to shoot for 12, kind of do four issue seasons. So three, four issue seasons, and culminating with the 12th issue.
Okay, so the Kickstarter is going on right now as this posts. Tell me when it's going to conclude.
It's going to conclude on the 18th of February.
So about roughly a month.
Yeah, roughly a month.
Okay, and refresh my memory how the first one went.
First one went really well. We exceeded our goal by quite a bit, so we were able to put the second one to the grindstone and got it churned out a little bit later than I was hoping, but that's kind of the theme for the year is just nothing's going the right way, or at least the theme for last year. So we're hoping 2021 will make things go a little bit faster and get a few more issues put out.
That'd be good. Now, on a Kickstarter page, what does it say as to when you expect the book to be ready?
The book is 100% done. So basically as soon as Kickstarter sends us the funds, we'll ship it off to the printer and should have everything by March for the backers.
Oh boy, that'll be good. I like the fact that something is done ahead of time. And I guess I should have known that when I looked at the book, because the book looks all done when I got a chance to read it. So very good. So the trick about this book, and I think I encountered this last time, is it's really difficult to talk about without spoiling things. And I'm gonna trust you to tell me what kinds of things we can and can't talk about, because this is a really fascinating story. I love science fiction. I love this kind of thing. It's just a great, great story. Now, why don't you give the general overview of what Driver 8 is about?
General overview. Driver 8 is this gentleman named Paul McGann. Paul decided to leave his entire life behind to take this job as an agent or a driver. And basically what that is he goes into this virtual world And since the virtual world is always running, he's got to go in and take care of any programming glitches or what have you. The virtual world is designed to train different AIs and everything, from, you know, an AI that might run your microwave to a policeman AI. And the entire virtual world is designed around to learn around or for the AIs to learn in a real world setting. And they don't know that they're AIs. They're programmed to think that they're human, so they can learn as much about their job in relation to a human as possible. But as a consequence of that, the simulation's always got to keep running. So that's what these driver agents are for. They go in and take care of any glitches that manifest themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I think you've actually spoiled a little bit at the end of the first issue. We don't really know a lot of the AI business until we get to the end of the first issue, if I remember.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, so being like second, you kind of gotta say some of it otherwise.
Well, that's the thing about this book. It's so interesting and intricate, and that I'm nervous about asking questions, because there's some things that if I ask a question, it might reveal a little something. I hate to do that on some levels, but I guess the first issue is already out and been out for a little while, so I guess we should consider that fair game.
Yeah, that's fair game. And then I would say anything with the doctor and nurse, and then the last few pages probably would be spoiler territory, but anything else would be fair game.
Okay. So I have to ask, Paul McGann.
Yeah.
Isn't that the name of a doctor, one of the Doctor Who characters?
It is. It's the name of the Eighth Doctor, actually.
That was the one in the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, the one in the movie. And then he had his own little special here a few years back.
Mm-hmm. I saw another Doctor Who reference somewhere. I'm trying to remember where I saw it. But there's another reference to Doctor Who somewhere in the second book.
There is. And I guess I could tell right now, I've named the first several driver agents according to the Doctor actors that played them.
Okay. Because I said, that sounds like a doctor name to me. I hate to spoil stuff like that, because that's kind of fun to discover. But on the other hand, you know, it might be something that might push somebody over the edge to going in and supporting it. So you never know. Those kinds of fun things can happen. And I liked it a lot. We might cover some ground like we did before, but, you know, it's been a while, and people may not have the chance to go back and listen to the last time we talked. Tell us a little bit about where the story idea came from for you.
Well, the story originated with, unsurprisingly, the song Driver Aid by REM, but instead of a literal meaning of the lyrics, I kind of took like the loneliness that the person the song was about, the train conductor, and just, you know, kind of this isolation that he was feeling, and, you know, it just seemed like it's almost like the same routine every day, and nothing changes, and just feels so isolated. So I took that feeling and, crafted a character and then a story that he could fit into and this world around that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I find interesting about the book, and it's true from the first book too, because I didn't know there was AI stuff involved until we get to the very end. It's, you know, in the second book, we seem to, now that we know that, we kind of go back and forth a little bit between the AI existence and the quote unquote real existence,
right?
Which is something. And I think you did a great job, by the way, I have to say, doing that and making those leaps back and forth, I thought was really nicely done.
Oh, thank you.
At the very beginning of the book, and I hope it doesn't spoil too much, but there's Paul is talking to what looks like other versions of himself.
Yes.
And let's just say they show that they're not real people somehow. Which I had to laugh when they start to reveal that. I was like, what are they doing? And all of a sudden we find out. And I was... Let's just say these multiple versions actually chase after him at one point. And it's funny to see them transformed into, well, it's something that lets us know that they're not real people because they couldn't, real people couldn't do this. But it's such a funny little bit. I had to laugh when I saw it. And then, of course, you know, when he starts to wake up and stuff, it's all, it's the great thing about this book. Another great thing, and I love the first issue and the same thing goes, is the, there's an undercurrent of humor involved that I really like. I, you know, because something like this could be extremely serious and extremely deadly, I suppose, is the way we could look at it. But instead, you have this undertone of humor. I mean, like, for example, his manager or supervisor, the guy that's in charge, he talks in a really odd way, you know, to the side. I can't imagine a boss talking like that. But that of course, is the part of the fun of this, is to make him this is just a guess on my part. I wonder if he's really alive or is this another AI trying to that's scheduled or made to seem human in some ways, that it's got a little overdone somehow. I mean, that you don't have to spoil that. You don't have to answer that at all. That might be something we'll find out later on because we've got 12 issues to get through. But I don't know a boss that acts like that, which of course adds to the humor of it. And of course it makes me wonder because Paul's asking the boss, well, why are you an image, you know, that sometimes. And he said, well, why aren't you really here? And he gives an explanation for that, that I didn't buy, frankly, but there's all these wonderful things going on. I'm never 100% sure. And of course, one of the great characters in this book is the proxy. It's a live person, and they've got the computer intelligence that's going along and helping them, and like they go by the name of Proxy, and Proxy makes me think more about the boss. That's what makes me, because Proxy and the boss often talk to each other.
They do,
and I'm kind of like, I wonder, are they parts of the same thing, and you know that. You don't have to spoil that. That's just a guess on my part, just because as I was reading it, I got a kick out of it. But it's such an interesting book in the sense that I don't know what's going on. And I love not knowing what's going on. I love to find out. And you are doing a great job of unfolding things slowly, which I like. I don't want like it when people just blatantly, say the whole thing. Right off the bat, there was a Batman, it was a year-long story, and in issue 26, came out weekly, and in issue 26, they revealed who the big bad was. And people criticized the writer because, why did you wait so long? Well, he said that it was a year-long story, and I didn't want to reveal right from the beginning. I wanted to make it open slowly, and you're kind of doing something similar with a 12-issue storyline, so... It's fun to watch you slowly unfold things, and we have to kind of pay attention, and I love a book that makes me pay attention, so I think this is great.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always a challenge when writing something to balance about what I can reveal, what needs to stay hidden, if I've revealed my hand too much on certain things, and if I do reveal something, well, then again, that's got to turn over and put other questions in people's minds. It can't just be a reveal for the sake of a reveal. It's got to lead to something more interesting. And it's always a kind of a high wire act to balance all that out. But I am glad that you did notice the Doctor Who naming. That does make me happy.
He says, like at one point, he says, wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey. I don't know a boss that would ever do that. So unless he's just that kind of a boss, there are some unusual bosses out there that don't mind those things. But to me, I just kind of looked at it and went, that is so odd, and even Paul is kind of, what?
When he says, yeah, he even remarks, why is the driver control master acting like this? So, that's something we'll definitely, delve into a little bit more of the driver control master and what he does and, what he does when he's not around Paul. A little bit more next issue.
See, I like Paul because he's a very human person with all these things. And it's an odd thing to say, I guess, but he has the human aspects that make him a lot of fun to go along. He's not, government agents and stuff. We always get the men in black and is in our heads and, they're all tightly wound and stuff like that. But he is an average person. in how he does things. And I like that.
Yeah. You know, the whole, or one of the main parts of his character is that, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's kind of a loser in his own eyes. You know, I imagine that the ad for, you know, being a driver agent sounded kind of glamorous, but the qualifications were probably something to the effect of, you know, being good at playing World of Warcraft or video games or something like that, because you're, you know, delving into the simulation, which is, you know, also part of the fun disconnect. And, you know, people are expecting, you know, him to be, you know, kind of, like you said, kind of stilted in the beginning because he's an agent. And, you know, the fact that he's not, the fact he doesn't look like he's trained, and, you know, what happens at the end of the issue happens, you know, you're kind of wondering, well, what's going on? Well, you know, that clarifies it more in the second issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul gets a big surprise at
yes,
one point. I don't in any way want to even begin to hint at it, because you can see by his face, he's shocked. And I'm shocked when we get to see what's going on, or when he sees what is something happening. And immediately when I saw that, I went, wait a second here. You know, there's a lot more going on than I thought. So I'm so interested to see. This is, like I said, this is a great job of teasing us and pulling us through and making us want to find out more, which I really like. And no, you've actually got parallel storylines going through. You've got the Paul, and then you've got the other driver.
Right.
What number is she?
She's 14.
What number? 14. Yeah. She is. Well, they've run into a police officer initially, and Jody ends up hanging with the police officer in part of it, which it's kind of fun to watch those two interact. You know, Paul doesn't make a good impression with her.
Not at all.
And so the two of them, they actually hit it off some. I think two women, they find things that they can relate to. Using a gun happens to be something that they have in common. And there's all kinds of really interesting dialogue that they have. Particularly, I really enjoyed when the two of them talk to each other. Even when they're shooting, they're talking to each other and they're discussing what's next and what we should do, and all those kinds of things. And I really thought, as much as I thought Paul was particularly human, these two are the most real in when they're talking to each other. I really found that good. Woman-to-woman conversation, especially in an action sequence, is always interesting to me, because we don't get enough of that in comics or in media, in my opinion. So to see this that discussion and to see what they do, and of course they get to be, you know, action heroes on some levels, and it's so much fun to do that. Was that one of the things you wanted to accomplish with this series, to have those two kind of do more action things?
Yeah. You know, I've always, you know, believed that the only real female characters to write are strong female characters, and every woman's strong in their own way. And, you know, to write them as a cardboard cutout is just kind of a disservice. You know, I'm not like a big social justice advocate or anything, but I just, you know, I'm more of an advocate of realism, I guess. Take after the school of Henry James, and you know, I grew up with, you know, strong characters, female characters like Ripley in The Aliens, Ivanova in Babylon 5, you know, different other characters. And, you know, just to, you know, have that, I think, in also a lot of respects too, you know, you see that does mean a lot to people. And, you know, I enjoy writing strong female characters.
Well, you know, I got tired of Lois Lane a long time ago. I have to say, her evolution has definitely improved the character. You know, she was originally trying to get Superman, you know, the old joke, she's trying to trick Superman into a loving relationship, you know, way back in the 40s and stuff like that. But now that they're actually married, I actually like Lois a lot more, because she is, you know, as the reporter and stuff like that, she is somebody, she's actually bailed out Superman a time or two, which I always thought was great. So I like that. So I see some of that more modern, more up-to-date feel in the two characters. And that's interesting that they get along so well. You know, it's, you know, they, one knows more than the other one does as to what's happening, but she's dropping hints to her a little along the way. And then there's a, something happens that allows her to tell a secret or two. And the officer is kind of glad to find that out. And part of it, I think, is this, you know, the female buddy thing that they're developing. And it's fun to, for them to talk to each other. You mentioned that you've had a lot of strong female characters that you're exposed to. Are there any ones in particular that you based these two women on, or are they products of your imagination?
These two are mainly just products of my imagination. I didn't really have a template in mind for who they should be. I know I picked a couple of actresses to give the artist a reference, but I couldn't even tell you who they are now. I was just trying to find someone who, you know, fit the look in my mind for them. But, you know, it's always fun to write strong female characters. And, you know, as I said before, I don't really think there's any other type because, you know, all women are strong in their own way. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't necessarily have to be slinging a gun around. But yeah, I did have a lot of fun with, the kind of the buddy cop dynamic there.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let me ask you, you've got 10 more issues to go. Are we going to meet more female characters as the story unfolds? And you don't say who, but okay, just that's good to know.
Yeah, we will. The next issue, it's not much of a spoiler because, you know, you see the little blurb for it in the, you know, in the back next to the letter column, but, you know, we'll be having some fun with UFOs and the simulation.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be cool because I'm so terrified of spoiling something. I just, it's one of those great stories that if you pull a piece out, the whole, it's like those little games where you have like a tower that's built out there, and if you pull the wrong thing out, the whole tower comes down. And it's that way with the story. If I pull on the wrong part, I'm going to reveal a whole bunch of stuff that I don't want to do.
Well, just don't reveal that they're all living on Mars, and we'll be good.
Okay. So it's such a great book in the sense that there's strange little twists in the story moving along the way. And something happens to the officer that kind of – and I don't want to spoil that either, but let's just say she doesn't come through this unscathed.
She's gonna have a couple scars by the end of the issue,
and it makes sense, you know, because see, if you're involved in something, and this is one thing about the X-Files that used to drive me nuts, or that I actually liked, and other sci-fi shows always drive me nuts when people get involved in the unknown and they come through unhurt or unscathed in any way. I mean, the X-Files, they were Mulder and Scully were forever ending up in the hospital, and I like that. Because you're dealing with the unknown, how can you possibly be prepared? There was one time they were in a Jeep, and these little green fluorescent bugs got all in there.
Oh, yeah.
And they ended up in the hospital. And I'm sitting there going, yes, how can they possibly get away without being hurt? They don't know how to protect from these things. And so for me, I really like that. And it's the same thing with this story. I like the fact that there's danger involved.
Yeah, no one is really safe, put it like that.
Which I like. I like danger to be in there. I don't want to see people just, you know, not everybody's invulnerable. Not everybody gets away with stuff. And to see them, you know, interact, and we get to know the people as a result of the interaction, and we also get to see what they do. Which is great stuff. So if you had to describe the second issue to folks, how would you describe it? What kind of language would you use to tell people what the second issue accomplishes?
That's a very good question. You know, I've always said I'm good at writing, but I'm horrible at describing my writing. even on the Kickstarter, I kind of just – it's like, I don't know what to say. I'll just kind of modify the tagline from the last Kickstarter and use that.
Well, the story moves forward. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Let's start with that. And we get to know Paul better.
We do. You know, if we find out a little bit of his background, and, you know, kind of just his thought process and, you know, kind of what has gone on in his life beforehand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll keep throwing that in. I'm not a huge fan of flashbacks, so I like things that kind of develop naturally. It used to drive me crazy when watching Lost because the whole thing was, you know, one giant flashback. But then again, the story itself was so interesting that I had to keep watching it. So,
yeah. You know, I always used to hate they made these Perry Mason movies. And what they did was we'd watch for 2 hours and we had no idea who did it until suddenly, like 2 minutes before the movie's going to end, this one fact gets revealed. And everything becomes clear. And I was like, you know, I why don't I just turn in the last 2 minutes and find out what's going on? Why do I have to watch the whole thing? But see, what you're doing is you are telling us little bits and pieces as we go along. And I like that. I want to sit there and kind of like I'm thinking about the boss and I'm thinking about, you know, the different agents and the drivers and what they do and what they mean. You know, it's something really interesting to me to look at because I like something that challenges my thinking and makes me – I'm trying to understand what's going on. And I love that about Driver 8 in the sense that it's a very complex story. It's not that it's indecipherable. It is. I can figure out what's happening to some degree. And that makes it all the more fun for me to read. Is to be able to say, okay, this piece goes over here, and this might mean this. And if you like solving puzzles like I do, then you're going to love this book because it's got all kinds of wonderful little pieces floating that you have to pick out and say, okay, this moves this direction, and this is going to go this way. And I love that when I read. So that's one of those things I really love about the books.
Well, thank you. You know, the thing for me is, yeah, I try to write a book that I would enjoy reading. So I put meaning in just about everything. Hardly anything is there by accident, whether it's, you know, the Doctor Who references to their names or, you know, other stuff. So, you know, if someone's rereading it and then something might just click for them or, you know, they Google a certain line from the book, maybe they'll come across a, you know, a character motivation, be like, oh, okay, so that's that. But wait, why did he say that way? And, mm-hmm. you know, just fun little stuff that you can enjoy it if you, you know, just read it through. But if you go back and reread it, you'll find a lot more. And, you know, try and just, you know, something to keep people busy. There's nothing I hate more than a comic book that takes 2 minutes to read. I remember the first Star Wars, when Marvel got it back, Star Wars number one, I was reading it, I was enjoying it. And then at the very end, I think Luke confronted Vader and I'm like, okay. And then it was over. And, you know, it was literally less than a 5 minute read. But then I had all these pages and I just scanned through them and those were just art and script and things like that. So, you know, I want to give, you know, especially on Kickstarter, people, you know, the ability to feel that they've gotten their money's worth. And, you know, that's very important to me no matter what I write. Mm-hmm.
Well, this will be fun because you're doing that. You are unfolding things in such a way that it keeps me puzzled and keeps me interested. I've got to know what's going on. So I'm really going to enjoy this. This is, of course, you've got 12 issues. This is the second one. So this is a great time to jump on board because I'm sure, you know, on the Kickstarter, you can get the first and the second issue. Let's say you didn't participate in the first Kickstarter. You can probably get both of these issues. So it's not too late to come on board and get into this story.
Right. And we're actually part of Kickstarter's pilot add-on program, similar to what Indiegogo has. So you can actually add on the first issue. There's a tier with both books, physical books, and then all pledges come with both digital files of issues 1 and issue 2. So I'm trying to make it really easy for people to get on and catch up. And we'll be continuing to do that kind of thing throughout the next issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a couple other aspects of the book because I don't want to. I'm terrified of spoiling the story, but there's a couple of other things in the issue that I really get a kick of. out of, and one of them, as you've already talked about, there's a letters column.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. and I got a kick out of the fact that Proxy is the one who answers the letters. I found that very funny.
Yeah, I mean, I can get away with a lot more with writing as Proxy than I can as an anonymous editor, I think. But yeah, we were getting ready to put the first book out, and I'm just going through it, and I'm like, I like it, but there's just something missing, and I can't put my finger on it. And then it just kind of hit me all of a sudden. Well, two things were missing: the letter column, and then the advertisement at the back. So. I got a hold of my artist and, Jorge Gabato, like I've mentioned many times, he's a drawing machine. I'm pretty sure he's a robot himself. He just does such tremendous work in such a short amount of time. He did the first ad in the back for us. And then I got busy doing the letter column. And, the book felt complete at that point for me, just because, it just reminded me of, all the fun we used to have going over the letters, mm-hmm. Back when I was a kid. And comics just lost something when they took out that letter column and said, you can visit us in our forums. And I'm like, well, yeah, but this is just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Because I was actually fortunate enough to have a letter that I had sent him when I was a kid printed in one of the Avengers.
Oh, nice.
Books. So to this day, I have a little copy of the image of it. I don't have the book anymore, but I have the a scan of it so I can look at it and see about it was. I complained bitterly that there was some rowdy language in the Avengers, shall we say, back in those days. And I also am a big fan of the Black Knight. So they put that in there to talk about the Black Knight, who's getting a book these days. But anyway, one of the letters made me laugh was somebody from Florida actually says, "Are you going to enslave us like the Skynet AI?" Which I got a kick out of. And the answer, I daren't do it because it's hilarious, the answer to that. And if you want to read a really funny response, read that one. That's the last of the letters on the page. And God, it made me laugh out loud when I saw it. It was so funny. References to Skynet and talking about who Skynet is and talking about Siri, for example. So I always talk about the fact that Alexa and Siri get into an argument because you walk into the house and you say, Siri, turn on the sounds on. And Alexa goes, "Hey, who's the Siri girl? I'm Alexa." So I always kind of thought those were going to be, two of them are going to fight. And you mentioned Alexa and Siri in there about that. So there's a whole bunch of wonderful stuff in there that I daren't even start to talk about because it's going to be wonderful for people to read. It's a funny letters column. And I just like that. So it's really well done. I have to say, it's nice to read that. There's one other thing that happens after the letters column that I got a kick out of. It's on the top. It says faux advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a kick because we see Paul in what's called the snacking catastrophe. And, yes. Because this is you were talking about the fact there's no advertising and stuff like that. Yeah, this is it alludes to. Well, I hate to say this, but there's a company right now that's doing this very thing, has cakes that are being advertised in their comics, shall we say. So I had to laugh even more when I saw that because it reminded me. I said, oops, let's hope the other company's not looking at this particular page. And I love the catch line. It says, "Drive away hunger with Hostess Binklage," I guess it is, cakes. And I got a huge one. Of course, the drive away was the thing that made me laugh. I thought, that's great. That's witty. I like that stuff.
I don't know if – I know that in the printed edition of the first issue – people could find in the back Mostus snack pies. I believe it's called Sidrat Snack Attack. Didn't get in the digital copy. I need to actually go revisit that and put that in for this one. Because again, you know, we gotten everything ready and it was just like literally like 3 days before I had to send it off to the printer. I'm like, this is still missing something. So that's when in the first issue at the end, the letter column and then the first faux advertisement were born.
Now, there's something else that kind of interests me. And I think this is true for both issues. Is it the back page? Yeah, it's on the back page, back cover. There's a Bible verse.
Yes.
And you know, the interesting thing, because I'm a little more familiar than maybe some people are, you quote one of the Bible verses and you actually list the version that it's quoted from. Not many people realize there are several different versions of the Bible going around. And I looked at it and went, wow. I said, this is really interesting. So talk about why that's there. I mean, what does that accomplish as far as the book goes?
It's foreshadowing. Trying to think of the least spoilery way to say it. part of the advertising, it you know, says that near future science fiction beyond the edge of reality takes place during humanity's last days. So, let's see. I probably should leave it at just that. But
okay.
I will say one of the things that I enjoyed, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Tag and Mink are dead. There's a Babylon 5 episode where, just kind of the idea, like all this epic stuff is happening, but what's going on with the people? How do they react to it? The everyman, the Joe Schmo going about his job. I like to explore that. So, we'll kind of leave it at that on the Bible verses.
So the Bible verse is alluding to issue 3, or is it issue 2?
It's kind of alluding to probably more the end of the story. We'll put it like that.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that's interesting. Well, then I was going to quote the verse, but maybe I won't because it might give away a little something.
I don't mean the end of the issue 2. I mean like the end of the story in general.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, 12 issues. Yeah, the 12th issue. So we'll go on with that. So, I'm so interested because the Bible seems to be popping up, especially in comics, it seems like these days. There's a lot of interesting things with biblical people using biblical references for stuff. So I'm just fascinated by that. But anyway, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you about. And there's the Limitless Comics Group. And there's an ad for a Kickstarter coming in spring called Mrs. Vengeance.
Yes.
Is that another one of your creations?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Mrs. Vengeance is born out of my desire to write The Shadow. More than anything else in the world, the one comic or book I would write would be The Shadow. And I can't do that right now. So I, kind of went the Sam Raimi route and created my own character, Mrs. Vengeance. And so she's more of a, pulp noir type character.
Gotcha. Yeah. She's interesting. It's a black and white page, interestingly. Is the book with her in it going to be black and white?
It will be, yes. And that's actually part of one of the pages there. So we are actually seeing the interior art for the first time.
Cool. Very cool. Because she looks interesting because she's got sort of a smoky or a misty thing around her. Cape or something tends to be supernaturally kind of looking and stuff like that. So yeah, The Shadow definitely has a thing about it. It's nice that you made her again a female character, which is kind of fun. So I like that. Mrs. Vengeance. That's you have to wonder, of course, being a guy, I always wonder who's Mr. Vengeance. maybe we'll have to buy the book to find out,
Maybe so.
Remember her name, it says on there. So I think that's pretty cool. So this is a really great book. And again, tell us when that's going to conclude the Kickstarter.
Kickstarter will conclude February 18th.
So now's the time to jump on board. Don't wait. We want Gerald not to have to get those daily heart attacks when you get a Kickstarter and you refresh and nobody has supported it in the last couple of minutes. And I know too many people who run Kickstarters who just like they're physically and emotionally exhausted by the end of it. It's a lot easier on Gerald and people working with him. If we get in there and we get that goal met right away and then we get into stretch goals, he knows he's getting his money, and that's a good way to do it. So we should be doing that for Gerald here. Now, are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of, or are these guys going to be keeping you busy for a while?
Right now, these will be keeping me busy. Every now and then, I do spare covers for Anthony Moore, the owner of Limitless Comics, and I did some of the covers for issues 1 and 2 of Driver 8, and I did one alternate cover for Mrs. Vengeance. So I do some cover work there. But as far as writing, these two are going to keep me busy for quite a while. On Mrs. Vengeance, I know I put Spring in there, and I might have to change that before we go to print. I just kind of hit me the idea earlier today to, like, well, instead of, you know, breaking it out like people normally do, issue 1, then a Kickstarter for issue 2, then a Kickstarter for issue 3, maybe do issues 1, 2, and 3, because it's a limited series of 3 issues. Just do all those on 1 Kickstarter. So I haven't quite made up my mind on that yet.
There's an interesting thing in the credits on the inside cover. It says, what is real? How do we define real? To the characters in a television show, movie, or book, they are as real to each other as you and I are to each other. Yet we deem them not real. This is a really interesting... is that kind of a Limitless Comics idea, or is that having to do specifically with Driver 8?
That's more to do with Driver 8. I realized in the first issue I used up all my thank yous. I didn't have anyone else to thank, so I thought, well, why don't I just use that space to put in, just kind of fun little blurbs for anybody who's paying attention.
Well, I like those kinds of things. I'm one who reads it from cover to cover. I don't want a book to last me 5 minutes. If I see something in there, I want to get in there and read the stuff. But you've even under the credits says you were not ready the likeness of all featured characters. it's in there. So there's all kinds of little things. If you get to read the stuff, you're going to find some really great little tidbits in there that's going to enjoy it. Now, one of the things that's mentioned in there too, I think we should also make sure people know, is that you have a website, driver8comic.com.
Right. Eventually, it's going to be a full-fledged website. Right now, it just points to the Kickstarter. But the idea is for the future to, have a nice functioning website, be a part off of limitlesscomicsgroup.com. You people will be able to go and buy back issues whenever we're not having a Kickstarter, and kind of just expand the lore a little bit. Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. This is Limitless Comics. You mentioned there's a guy who runs it. Are you part of the organization for that, or did they pick up your comic? How did you get involved with Limitless?
I started helping Anthony out 2 or 3 years ago, just doing some graphic work. And, he's put out probably about 8 books now himself. So he just, we actually just got another one of his books, The Youngins, funded, about a teen superhero group. And, I talk about Jorge being a machine. Anthony literally is a machine when it comes to writing. He's got all these great ideas and stories coming out. So long story short, I was helping him. And then, I got the idea for Driver 8. And I was like, hey, I got this idea for a comic. He's like, well, okay, let me hear it. And I had the entire script for the first issue written out. And the rest is history after that.
Cool. Well, that's great. See, it's so much easier. I have to tell you, as somebody who has seen people who have been suggesting comics, sometimes I get like a paragraph. I see a paragraph to somebody, and that's all there is to it. And I'm like, well, what's the story? Oh, well, I haven't gotten that far yet. Well, get busy, because nobody's going to pick up an idea. Right. Or write a TV script based on an idea. I used to help people write scripts for a Star Trek fan film. And this one guy, one friend of mine said, I've got this idea for the doctor on Voyager develops the cure for the phage, which if you know the show, that was a deal where they kind of took over people's bodies and stuff. And we were a bunch of us sitting there, and we all went, and? That's a nice idea, but what does that mean as far as things going? So you are ahead of that game, which I'm very pleased to hear, because I love a good story. You're a storyteller rather than an idea person, so that's great.
No, thank you. I will say I do know what the very last panel of the series is going to be.
Oh, well, I know it's way in advance, but is there possibly after this story is done, more in the Driver 8 universe you might be interested in telling?
That'd probably be spoilery if I said anything.
Okay. Well, we won't get too far then. We won't worry about that. We just have to get the books to find out those good things.
Yeah.
If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that? You got driver8comic.com. What about social media?
Social media, I'm on Twitter every now and then at JJJJJJJones754. Don't remember how many J's I put in my own name. Instagram, JJJ754. And then on Facebook, just look for Limitless Comics. Look for Anthony Moore and then find him tagging Jerry Jones. Professionally, I'm Gerald J. Jones. Everybody just calls me Jerry. I've tried to go through so many different, pen names. It's not funny. I was originally going back when I did my backup story for Image Comics Paradigm. I went by J.J. Jones. And then I found out that there's another J.J. Jones out there who writes such intriguing stories as Touched by a Werewolf. And publish those on Amazon. So it's like, okay, yeah, I don't want to be associated with that.
Well, it's good stuff because this Driver 8 is a great book. I'm glad the first one ended up so well. And I'm hoping for the same for this. I hope that we actually get – it's even faster that you get the money pledged to you and get those good things done. So I want to read the whole story. I want to know what is coming because there's a lot – I can still see the light at the end of the tunnel. Even in issue two, I kind of have an idea where you might be going, but I want to know. I want to read the whole story. So I want to see the whole thing. I don't want to get stuck in the middle of the story. I want to be able to get to the end. So that'll be great stuff. So just keep it up. You're doing wonderful stuff. The issues one and two are just terrific. I think that they are so great and so thoughtful and so expressive and so interesting that we got to do more Driver 8. I just got to see it. So just keep up the good stuff and much success.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, if you ever have Eric Larson on, you might just nudge those two issues his way and go from there.
Okay. I haven't tried to get him. That's somebody I might have to try to get. Well, we'll see.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Aaron Pahara, the creator of a fascinating book called The Book of Lyaxia. It comes out from Second Sight Publishing. And the first issue I see is together. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Wayne?
It's good to talk with you. Good. I met you first at, I think it was MegaCon. I think you had a booth in MegaCon.
Yeah, I believe it was MegaCon last year. I think I have one of your cards still, and it's just...
Oh, cool.
But yes, we definitely met there. It was one of my first big shows. I did a Clearwater library show back in 2019, and that was kind of my first foray into actual signings and stuff. And then MegaCon was my actual multi-day, my first multi-day convention that I went to.
How was that for you? I mean, the firsts are always the one you remember. So what was it like to have a booth at MegaCon for you?
It was definitely different because I've been to that show so many times as a guest, and being on the other side of it was exhilarating and terrifying at the same time.
So. Oh, you're not alone. That's I know so many people who have gone to cons for many, many years, and suddenly they have a comic and they have a booth. And it's so different when you're on the other side. You know, I say that because a lot of people listen to this podcast who are creators themselves. And it's such an interesting experience to be on the other side of the table for a change. So is that the only one you've done so far?
No, I did the MegaCon. I did Tampa Bay Comic Con. In 2019, I did a couple of store signings. I did like EC3 signing with a bunch of other super talented local creators. That was super fun. That was like a multi-person signing that I did. But con-wise, those would be the only two. 2020 was supposed to be kind of, let's do a lot of cons. And then 2020 happened, and I did no cons.
I'm seeing some starting up. In fact, the last Sunday, there was a local one, because I'm Central Florida too, and several people went to a local con. I don't even remember the name at the top of my head, but it was in DeLand, I think, and I saw there's some people who've been on this podcast with, like Roland Mann from Silver Line was there, and these other people were there and stuff like that. And there was a weekend when two of them were going on at the same weekend. Actually, there was three in December. There was Spooky Empire had something, and then there was two others that were going on at the same time. And I think they might have diluted from each other. It was too many to have on one weekend at the same time.
Oh, for sure. And that's going to be one of the challenges for this year, because I mean, if we do have cons this year, obviously it's going to be a shortened year, and you know, you're going to try to pack all of these shows at once. Right now, you have MegaCon just got moved to, I believe it was August 12th, and then the Tampa Bay show, the one in Tampa, was supposed to be the end of July. Mm-hmm. So you're basically talking relatively big, you know, shows 2 weeks apart, not to mention SuperCon in, you know, in July as well, beginning of July. So it's going to get rough. Like this year, if there is shows, it's going to be pretty interesting to see how it's maneuvered.
Now, I've got to ask you, of course, no, this is early in the year. How are you planning to approach conventions this year? Are you going to space them out? Are you going to do as many as you can? Are you going to wait until the vaccine gets further out? How are you going to handle it?
So right now, I did do one show. It was in Orlando. Why am I blanking on the name of it? It was in December. And that was my first show that I did this last year, the only show I did last year. And it was a one-day show, you know, 8 hours. I believe those shows are going to be a lot safer than doing multi-day, you know, 20, 30,000 people showing up. So I believe I'm going to probably try to stick around those shows until the vaccine is available, and then, you know, arrange store signings and, you know, stuff like that. Smaller, but, you know, still, if I can, I want to meet the fans, you know? So, yeah. But have to be smart about it as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're doing it really wise. I think it's everybody. Of course, there are some people I know who are just champing at the bit, dying to get going. But
don't get me wrong. I'd love to do MegaCon. I was supposed to be not exhibiting, but I was supposed to go to San Diego last year. I have tickets for San Diego this year because they rolled over. I just told them, hey, let's roll over the tickets. Mm-hmm. That's July. I don't see it happening. I mean, just that show, I mean, you're talking 140,000 people from across the world. It's going to be hard to pull off this year, but hopefully.
Well, I want to get to your book, and I'll get there real quick, but I got to give you a quick word of advice on San Diego. I've been there a couple times. The first year I went, I was exhausted. It's literally all over downtown San Diego, you probably know. And there are stores that are taken over. There's a huge convention center. There's hotels nearby. Stuff is everywhere. And I did not start walking before I went there. And it literally took a week of me in bed to recover from San Diego the first time I did it. I got smarter after that, and I started walking before I go just so I'm not so exhausted.
Right.
So okay. I would encourage you, walk if you can before you go, because it's going to be quite an exercise to get all over the place. So that's my advice to you. That's what I would say.
For sure. Yeah. I think I was there last time in 2016, 2017.
Oh, okay.
So you know there. I know what to expect, but it's you never expect exactly how much it grows every year. And
oh, yeah.
It's nuts.
It's wild. Are you going to you're just going to attend. You're not going to sell
stuff. I mean, again, it all depends. Now that I have, you know, the publisher, I have Second Sight that picked my book up last year. And, you know, the convention in Orlando was the first show I went with them. So I was, you know, officially with Second Sight at that point in time. So, you know, if they get a booth, I don't know if they're going to even be selling any tables. I think everything's going to be rollovers from last year. And since I didn't really, I mean, I tried, but I didn't get a table last year. I doubt that I'd be able to get one this year unless
That's so hard to get a booth at these things. And there's a lot of people I know who don't get booths at San Diego. They just go there to get a ticket to go in, and they kind of roam around and talk to people rather than being stuck in one location.
I know, and that's absolutely true. You know, the last time I went, I didn't have my book yet. So, you know, I kind of started, I had like a preview page, I believe, like first six pages of the first issue. And I just printed about maybe 100 of these, what do you call them? Like
ashcans? Yeah.
And I just hand them out. I gave them to some of the artists. I gave them to a couple of fans, you know, just, hey, here, this is coming. So I just kind of did that. You know, I got some responses because obviously I had contact info and I had all of that stuff on the back of the ash can. So people reached out to me. They're like, hey, this looks really cool. But they didn't even have like dialogue yet. It was just like a couple of the character sheets, you know, something about the characters and a couple of panels and pages, you know, from the finished book, but not lettered yet. That was fun.
Well, that's cool because San Diego is massive. It's not my favorite con. My favorite con is New York.
Never been.
If you ever get a chance, I love New York because it's just – and, of course, that's a song named after it. But the convention is massive. And the funniest thing versus San Diego, everybody in San Diego knows it's there because they take over downtown. And not everybody's happy with that either. If you go to New York and you walk three blocks away from the convention, they don't know it's there.
Oh, wow. That's nuts.
It's huge. It's in this Jacob Javits Convention Center, which is massive. And there's all sorts of stuff going on. If you get into like a subway or stuff like that. You'll see people wearing Hulk outfits and stuff, but people in New York, eh. We see that all the time.
It's New York. Wear outfits if it's Tuesday.
That's so. Right. It's true. It's so true. It's funny. But anyway, let's get talking about your book because I think that's real important to get to. You mentioned Second Sight. I'm curious. Did you submit your book for approval by them? Is that how you got with Second Sight?
So I spoke with Spike Durrell a little bit, and he kind of reached out to me and wanted me to submit. And I did, you know, I got a couple of other, you know, rejections and stuff like that. I wasn't like 100% sure if I wanted to get a publisher. You know, it's one of those things when you get so many rejections, sometimes you kind of have to think on it. But I'm glad that I did it. They're a great bunch of guys. I think the books, all of the books, I think, are going to go over gangbusters. They're actually going to previews. So I think the cutoff for previews is Friday. So if you guys want to get any of these books, Book of Lexia, yeah, of course, mine, you have The Edge and Lady Freedom and a couple of other awesome, awesome titles, definitely get to your local comic book shop and make sure they order it.
Okay, now the bad news is this episode is going to post on Sunday, but I know for sure that Diamond is not always as rigid with the deadline dates. They kind of do that so people do it. So if people are listening on Sunday, get a hold of your comic store. Let them know you want this book as soon as you can so they can get into Diamond and tell them they want to get this book. Because it's just the way that these things go. They're a lot more flexible than they make you think about that. So let them know, and they should be able to, and if they need to update their order, the local shop does, then be sure to do that. Maybe we should right away say that it's called The Book of Lyaxia, and it's spelled L-Y-A-X-I-A. And that's important to get in there. Make sure you get it spelled right, because sometimes people don't necessarily, the internet being the internet, not everybody spells well. So we want to make sure we get that in there so you can make sure you can get Aaron's book.
Of course, so, I would greatly appreciate it. I think, like I said, it's been a dream project of mine for about 10, 12 years. I've been developing the story and kind of changing it around and developing the characters and the world. So as the characters grew, as the story kind of developed, that's the one thing with this title. I did not want it to be so much a superhero title. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's about mythology. So you have like different gods living on the on this realm called the Nexus that basically. You have them separated in families, so you're going to have Greek gods, Egyptian gods, Norse gods, all living together.
Now, Lyaxia is a country, right?
No. Lyaxia is just, I thought it was something that I came up with. And the funny thing, because I looked it up after a while, after I finished my first chapter, I looked it up and the only thing that ever came up from Lyaxia was something about numerology. And it was so odd because it had so many same themes. If you look it up, it has so many different same themes that my book has. It's kind of nuts. Not saying mythology, just about, you know, the feel of the book and, you know, the mystery and kind of what the events of the book are. It was just so odd when I read it the first time.
Because on the first page it says Titan is the name of the thing. It's the capital of Lyaxia, it says on there. That's what right. Made me think it was a country.
Lyaxia is basically the kingdom. In a sense, it is a country. I thought you meant actual country in... in the world.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But yeah, so that is the Kingdom of Phyrexia, and you know, there are basically three main families. There's an Egyptian one and the Greek one, and then Phyrexia, which is kind of like they're kind of like kings of the gods.
Okay.
So their family is basically ruling over other families, and nothing kind of goes in an excess without their approval. Mm-hmm. And nobody likes them. So that's all I can say.
Okay. Well, there's a quote from, it says from the Book of Phyrexia on the inside cover.
Yes.
There's an equality in the universe. It cannot be seen or measured or felt. There is no such thing as ultimate power. Many of them seek it. All of them fail. That's an interesting, I take it that's something you wrote, right?
Yes. So each title, each chapter comes. Thank you so much for catching that. Every single chapter starts with a quote from Book of Phyrexia, which you will throughout the story find out what that actually is, because it's not so much just a title of the book. It is a physical thing in the story, and it has, at least I think it does, it has some pretty significant ramifications after you find out what it actually represents.
Mm-hmm. Now, the story starts out, and you start off with something that I know a little something about. There's a birth that takes place, and children are born, and they're twins.
Yes.
And I happen to be one of a pair of identical twins.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And I when I started to realize that these were there's two characters that the story kind of centers around, and they're twins. I don't think they're identical necessarily, but they're twins. And I people don't understand twins. I can tell you that right now. My brother and I, people looked at us like we were some odd, strange thing, because here were two people that were somewhat similar. And, you know, they didn't understand, you know, how could we be so similar and yet, you know, and yet function like that? Because people are not used to having to, people always ask me, what's it like to be a twin? And I always ask them, well, what's it like not to be? Because I don't know.
Right.
And so I got a huge kick that a lot of the story centers around twins. Is that some of the reason why you use twins as these characters? Because it's kind of a mystical thing that not everybody gets.
Yeah, there is definitely some mysticism about the, you know, about them being twins. There is more of a reason, story reason behind it as well. That's going to become evident over the end of the first arc. There is an event that takes place, and something happens that could not have happened if they weren't, you know, twins like that. And that was kind of one of the reasons. And I always wanted to have that, how should I put this? Like, not so much conflict, but I wanted to have, even though they are identical, and if not totally identical, because they have different, you know, hairstyles and they look a little different, but their personalities, I really wanted to make sure they're kind of contrasting personalities and such. But there is, you know, that was kind of the reasoning behind it. And I was always, you know, fascinated with the mysticism of twins, like you stated, and it just worked better in a story, because I've had them, I had them originally written, the very, very first draft I've had them written, one of them was older than the other, mm-hmm. and it didn't work, because you always, the way that I perceive things in that sense, like if one is older and other is younger, there's always going to be that subservitude issue. And I really didn't want to have that here. So I kind of changed that all in a second draft.
Well, I think it's really, really well done. Now, I think we should mention, too, that the twins' names appear to be Kronos and Deimos, right?
Correct. So okay, they are essentially Kronos and Deimos are, you know, they're Greek titans, Greek gods, basically a god of time and god of space. So that's essentially what they represent. And the thing with this, the thing that I wanted to do with the story is that it is a mystery so much about the twins as they don't really want to exert their power. They don't want to really show off their power. So nobody really knows exactly what they can do. And kind of there is that shock moment toward the middle of the first chapter where people are freaking out because of what's going on. And with Deimos, I'm really kind of keeping close to my chest because he has, like I said, he has certain abilities and powers, but I really wanted him to become gradual and kind of give people a gradual taste of it until it actually hits the fan.
It's really interesting. And are they rulers, basically, or is one of them a ruler? How's this working with them?
So they're basically both are princes. Their father is a ruler of the king. You don't see him in a first chapter. You know, you see him at the beginning. I believe it was page 2. You see him like before they're born, you know, sitting on a throne. So that's the father. But there is a whole mystery behind their father, behind their family, behind everybody that's interconnected with them. Everything in this story is connected with another thing, in a sense that my idea and my hope, I can't. It's up to a reader to decide. But my idea for this story is to basically there's a lot of twists and turns in there, but by the end of it, and there's going to be 6 chapters, and then one chapter that's called Hades, Birth of a God, which is kind of like, I really hate calling it Book of Alexia number 0, but essentially it takes place before all of this, and that's going to be out later this year as well. And it's all interconnected. And by the end of it, by the end of the 6th chapter, I want to make sure that the people understand that it just feels and they understand it as one complete story with not as many holes as, well, hopefully no holes. but that's always impossible when you write something like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is more of a fantasy setup.
Yeah, so I wanted to have like a fantasy mythology. There is, you know, science is going to be, you know, science fiction because I wanted it. It kind of feels like it's in space with the colors and the vibrancy and all of it. But it's not, in essence, it's not a science fiction story. It's more like science fantasy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's fantasy, mythology, action, mystery. That's how I would place it. And I also I never really wanted to put it in. Everybody keeps asking me, what is this rated? And I always struggle with that answer because I hate limiting myself. And each one chapter can be a little bit more adult than the chapter before it or not. But I wanted it to feel natural. I want it to feel like a progression of something. And I don't want to limit anything, really. I mean, if the chapter, you know, demands, if the chapter, if the events demand it to be a little bit more gruesome than the chapter before it, it's going to be. And that was kind of one of the hard sells to the publishers. And Second Sight, like I said, they believed in a story. And mm-hmm. I told them what my vision for it was. And they were like, that's cool. Let's roll with it.
Mm.
So,
cool. Because there's a panel in this first issue. Let's just say that they're not going to be able to fight anymore, this one person.
Yes, there's that.
So there's that one there. So that may be why they're asking you that. You're probably not going to have that kind of event every issue.
No.
But it does – it's not something I'm sure really young kids should be exposed to, but
no, I mean, if I had to put it, you know, I would say 14, 15 year olds, they're okay. Nothing extremely graphic. I mean, it's not Sin City, so, you know, it's, but yeah, there are definitely scenes, there are definitely events. One instant of language in the second issue, but
okay.
It was just because it was natural. And when you see the panel and when you read it, you'll understand why that was said. And it just, because I wrestled with that, I used that word, and I'm like, I don't really use this language anywhere else in a book. And I'm like, but that's exactly how I would react if somebody did that to me, and you know, it just felt natural, so I just kept it in there.
Hmm. It's so interesting. Now, I do have to ask you, are you the one that found the artist?
Yes. So, funny story about that. Originally, I don't know if you're familiar with Ale Garza, but he was supposed to be, you know, doing the book. And he was busy, and you know, the price point did not price point and him being busy were two sticking points, to say the least. And he introduced me to this artist, Andy Bacarizzo, that did the first three issues and a part of the issue four. I'm getting a new artist as well for the end of 4, 5, 6, and Hades. So there's going to be two different artists. They're both fantastic. Andy was just, you know, busy and just, just had to, he's still going to be doing the covers for the issues. You know, he's doing the character designs and all of that because I wanted that feel to stay there. But for the book, at the end of the issue 4 and going forward, it's going to be this new artist, and he's phenomenal. I can't, you know, they're both are.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's cool. So, well, it's good to see. Are their styles somewhat similar?
Yes. So, kind of hard to show over you know, podcast like this, but his name is Fabrizio Constantino. So you can, they're both, I really kind of wanted to have that kind of like anime and manga feel to it without it feeling too much like anime or manga.
Right.
They kind of both feel that way. And that was kind of one of my hardest points because I'm exactly like you. If I have to change a story, if I have to change an artist, I want to make sure that it's not constructing too much. I want it to be semi-similar and it feels like a natural progression.
Good.
So I believe that I believe I achieved that. So
Good. Well, that's a good thing. As long as they're somewhat similar, because sometimes the people choose an artist, and there was a book that I read one time, and they switched artists in the middle of the story, and I didn't even notice it because the style was so similar, and I was like, oh, well, I didn't even know that you changed, because that was so – you picked somebody who was so close to the other guy, and I like that. I'd rather that it goes that way, so I think you've done a good thing with that. I think that's great. The first issue is ready to be, or I take it from the time now that it's coming at this time, so that'll be March that we're expecting the first issue to hit, right?
Correct. So you'll be able to get the first issue at the stores, I believe it's March 3rd. March 3rd is the release date.
Early in the month. Well, that's good. That'll be great. And it looks like, according to the cover that I've got, it's only going to be $2.99, right?
I believe so. That's a, these, that's a great question for a second. I believe so.
Because a lot of books these days are $3.99. I bought a lot of books recently that are more than that. So $2.99 is a good selling point.
Like I said, I think so. There may be $3.99. I'm not quite sure, because that was again, that's a great question for a second.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, these days it's hard to know exactly how much a book is going to cost, because there's all over the place. But you know, it's if they're going to do that, it's a smart thing to start with a lower price in issue one, so you get more people buying it, and then raise the price maybe up to $3.99 for the second there on. That might be a way to do it. I mean, that's my guess, but we'll see what Second Sight has in mind, because it's going to be something.
The thing I can tell you about my books, I can speak from my title and the page counts and stuff like that, and there is a page count that actually increases in issue three. Issue three, you get more pages of the story. Issue four, you get even more pages. Issue five, you get even more pages. Issue six, I'm currently writing, and that's going to be interesting to see where that ends. Since that's the finale, they will, like, go all out. I'm like, don't say that to me. Don't say that to me, because I need to know how to edit this. But it's I have... You know, I already wrote the template of exactly everything that needs to happen, and just kind of have to put it in there and be done.
Okay. Well, cool. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun to read, because it's got a – I have to be honest with you. As much as I love my superheroes, I also like something a little different with that too. So I think that would be kind of fun to see how that goes. So it looks good. Before we go, I move on to other things. I did want to read the description of it from the previews. It's in Previews World, because I think this might help a little bit. It says, so welcome to the world of Nexus, world of gods from different mythologies, Greek, Egyptian, Norse, Roman gods living together. Join Kronos, Deimos, and Kronos II, twin royal brothers, while they try to find where they belong on this realm, what their destiny is. In the first issue of A Coup in Capital of the Gods, Titan, a coup against twins is underway, and a mysterious figure comes onto the scene that is attempting to guide one of the twins toward his destiny. I think that kind of, I like to give as much of the story as I can. So that I think it's going to be helpful. Now, and there they have it at $3.99. So it may be the version you gave me was a preliminary one, and it's actually going to be $3.99. So just FYI.
Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. But yeah, no, I wanted to, and there is that mystery figure. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
You read the book. And that's going to be, like I said, it's going to be very interesting. I can't wait to see what people think once that's actually fully revealed.
Now, who did the cover? Because there's it looks like a painted cover on this book.
I believe the cover that I gave you was Kenneth Rocafort, the artist that did Hunter Killer for
Yes.
Stockholm.
You're right. You're right.
And he also did, like, Superman, he did Teen Titans, he did some other stuff.
It's a very nice cover. It's definitely it's a little more artsy. The book, of course, most comics inside is a little less detailed, but the cover has a lot of detail to it. So it's kind of cool looking. I really like the way it looks.
Yeah, that's that is the main cover of the book. So when you go to the stores, that is going to be the cover that that everybody can get. And then there's going to be like a fun cover that Andy Bacarizzo, the artist of the book, did as well. And it's just a fun cover of the twins basically chasing this pig bunny through the forest. Just wanted to do something completely out of the left field. So
cool. Cool. Well, it's great fun to do those kinds of things. I think it's a lot of fun. I think we can use a little more variety in our storytelling. So I think it's great. And of course, the twin business gets me right away. I know what twins go through. So I think that's kind of a cool thing about that. I am curious as to why it on the cover, it calls it the second verse. Is there what's that about? Is that is there a line of fantasy comics or something they're doing? Is that what this is about?
So they have that's a second sight moniker. They have a second verse, which is kind of like I believe they did that as a fantasy and a sci-fi. They're gonna have a horror line and they're gonna have a hero line. So each one of them are gonna be called something a little bit different, but that's just a moniker for the second sight, for like that specific line of books.
Cool.
And yeah, there's that way they can kind of, I believe, market the book a little bit better, you know, having, you know, kind of like having an adult version of something like, I'm not comparing it to that, but let's say DC and Vertigo had their own thing. It's still DC technically, but Vertigo was its own separate entity. Yeah.
It's like an imprint.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. So that's going to be fun. Is this the first second verse book that's coming out?
I believe this is the first one.
Okay. So you're kicking it off. That's great. Great to do. It's a great book. It looks like it's going to be fun, and I think people will like it. I like stuff with a little variety to it, and I like something very different. I like the picture of Titan, which has two A's in it, has some floating parts of the city in the air and stuff. I really like the artwork. It's really cool, too.
So. Right, and that's one of those kind of things that when you see that first page, you're like, okay, is this a fantasy? Is this sci-fi? Because it could have both of those. It has that vibe, you know, like almost like a floating city. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to have that kind of feel, because even on the panels when the emissaries, when the people are coming to Titan, you kind of have this kind of like, looks like a landing pad, and you see the people coming out of this shapes and stuff like that. So I kind of wanted to leave it ambiguous to obviously more fantasy, but there's definitely science involved and technology, and even that's going to be a part of the mystery. There's a lot of moving parts, but I hope it all comes together, because like I said, it came together in my head. Now it's depending if it's going to come out or come together on paper.
Well, good. I think that'll be great. So the first one is March 3rd. Are they going to be monthly after that?
I believe it's going to be every 2 months.
2 months, okay.
That's yeah, okay. Every 2 months.
As long as we know ahead of time and we can plan for it, that's a good way to do it, so we know. So, yeah, it's really good. I love one of the things I noticed about the twins is that they kind of refer to each other by their first letter.
Sometimes, yeah.
Because, you know, twins, because we have our own language that we speak to each other, you know, the certain things that we do. And it's, you know, if I said this, some stuff I say to him to somebody else, they wouldn't understand what it is.
Right.
But because we have had the same experience, we understand that. And sometimes we have our own little little ways of speaking with each other. And I thought that was a great way to do that, to kind of show how twins interact with each other. I really like that. That was a cool way to do it.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah.
Well, so Yeah. So this is going to be on, this will be coming out on March 3rd. So you might want to make sure you get right away as soon as you hear this, get a hold of your local shop and tell them the Book of Lyaxia, Lyaxia. And you're going to want to get that in there from Second Sight Publishing and make sure that they order that for you. They, as much as they like to say you've only got a hard deadline, often Diamond is a little more flexible than that. But as soon as you get it in there, the better you're likely to get it. So be sure to do that. Now, are there other books you're working on, Aaron, or is this kind of keeping you busy?
So this is really keeping me busy right now. I'm kind of finishing I'm still writing the final chapter of it. And preparing, actually, I'm going to be doing all of these books got funded through Kickstarter. The first three and the fourth one's actually going to be on Kickstarter this upcoming Friday. Yeah, it launches Friday.
God, yeah.
It's already the end of January. yeah, so it launches Friday at 1 p.m. And the way that I'm doing it, I'm going to have some exclusive covers that, you know, Second Sight have their own covers. And this is these covers you're going to be only be able to get from me, either through, you know, Kickstarter like this. Some of them are going to be Kickstarter exclusives, and the other ones I'm going to bring to the shows. But for Diamond and for you know, Second Sight, they'll have their own covers for the book. So
cool. Now, this we're actually recording this a little early, just so people know that when this posts on Sunday, the Kickstarter will already be underway. It started on Friday, and so this will be underway too. So look for the Book of Lyaxia on the Kickstarter, and be sure to support it there so that we can get more of these good things going. So that's good. Now, Aaron, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
The easiest way, so I'm on Facebook. You can either look up Book of Lyaxia group or a comic page, or just look up my name and you know, talk to me on Facebook. On Instagram, it's basically my name again. And for Twitter, it's Book of Lyaxia is my Twitter handle.
Cool. Very good. Very good. These are all going to be good things. I think you're going to enjoy it, especially if you're looking for a little variety in your reading like I do. I love variety. As much as I love my Long Johns and my superheroes, I want some other kinds of storytelling too. And this is going to be one of those kinds of books. I think that'll scratch that itch really well. So Aaron, it's great to talk with you, and I wish you much success with this. I hope that Second Sight does a real great job and gets these out to everybody, and they really enjoy this book, and there's a big future for the Book of Lyaxia. And hopefully the Kickstarter will be a big success too, because I know how Kickstarters can help make good books available to the public, and I think that's something we need to do. So check it out on Kickstarter, and be sure to let your store know that you want the Book of Lyaxia. And Aaron, I wish you much success, and I look forward to seeing the stuff you're going to do.
You as well. You as well. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. And like I said, I hope this year, 2021, is a lot better for everybody else, so we can meet at the shows again and have some geek fun together.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.